Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 2021 offers, contact your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
Linda, you contacted us as well about this whole issue of visiting during level 5, and is there any give at all? What's your situation, Linda, please?
How are you, Joe? I was yesterday's conversations and previous conversations that have been aired on your show about, you know, the effects of people not being able to visit their elderly parents in care homes.
Yeah,
I have a boy. Yeah. He's 20. He lives near Portlaoise in a residential setting. And initially, when the first lockdown came, I didn't see him for 3 months. And I absolutely went into complete and utter shock and panic and wondered, how would my child survive without me? But more importantly, how would I survive without him?
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing that's always on my mind is, who gives these people emotional support? It's not too dissimilar from what that young girl has been talking about. Yeah. You know, we're in a crisis situation here, and who, like, for example, can hug or kiss my boy? Or, you know, I'm the one that tells him I love him,
yeah,
and I hug him. And I really, really, really worry about that, Joe, because...
Looking back now on the year, which unfortunately we're doing, and we were doing it way into the new year as well. Linda, look, during the first lockdown, could you see your 20-year-old son?
No. I remember I was getting ready. It was a Thursday, and I was getting ready and then got a phone call and was told, Linda, because, you know, whatever, the lockdown, you won't be able to see him. And I remember sitting on the sofa, Joe, for, I don't know, possibly an hour. I went into complete and utter shock.
Yeah.
And I didn't see him, I think it was for 3 months.
Oh my God.
Now, and my boy has limited communication, so I do FaceTime him at night time, and it's very funny. After about 20, 30 seconds, he'll say to me, bye, ma'am, and he hangs up on me.
Okay, okay.
But it's again, for me, it's about providing that emotional support, being able to hug him and kiss him and tell him that, you know, he's not on his own, he's not lonely. Yeah. Because you know what, Joe, I'm doing a social care course at night time. I'm in year 3.
Brilliant.
And it's really interesting. But one of the topics that came up with a particularly good lecturer is about the whole area of isolation around people, you know, in care homes and in residential homes. And that she said that the biggest thing that affects these people is isolation and removal from their immediate family and removal from their immediate community. And this is all just, it was bad before COVID. But,
and what was it like after 3 months of not being able to physically see him?
God, I thought I'd die, honestly. It was great then. I think from memory, I was allowed to visit the house for 30 minutes. Now, I obviously had to have my temperature checked. So what I used to do was I'd meet him out in the community in a park, and when I'd bring down a big picnic. And then, you know, he obviously had been brought to the park by the two support workers. So he'd say, Mammy's car. And I would drive him back to place. And then I could go in for 30 minutes. Now, that was difficult because he doesn't understand the time frame. So after 30 minutes, I'm saying, have to go, darling, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm just, like, the heart has ripped out me, Joe. I've often had to pull the car over. It's hysterically screaming.
And Linda, when is the last time you've actually physically been with him?
His birthday was the 23rd of September, and we brought him to a hotel.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, that was the last time.
He was 20.
He was 20, yeah. And I haven't seen him since. I can FaceTime him at night time. But, like, even though he got COVID... I think it was May. The staff are wonderful, and you know, he was brought to a separate apartment and all that. But you know what, Joe, I'm hardwired to look after my son with a disability, so I find it very difficult when I can't go down, you know, give him a kiss and a cuddle and say, you're all right, son, mama's here. But Joe, this extends even further than COVID. This, for me, has been a bone of contention for a long time about... I can only speak about my own experience, but not kind of getting, what's the word I'd say, an open invitation to go and visit your loved ones. There isn't... Organisations like service providers don't seem to be proactive in kind of encouraging you to come down and visit.
Well, the visits aren't allowed. It's not under level five.
But I mean, like, I'm talking about even before COVID. You know, it's kind of a struggle. You have to kind of negotiate, and I just find it's a bit of a culture here. Now, you know, I'm willing for somebody to prove me wrong, but I would have a lot of friends who'd have children or adults in residential care, and I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's extremely worrying.
Well, that's interesting in the generality.
Isn't
that
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you know what, Joe, you know, I obviously had very complicated reasons for having to put my son into residential care, but I keep saying to, you know, the parents that they... Show me the document that signed that said that I'd stop being his mother when he went into residential care.
Yeah.
And I'd stop loving him, you know. But even on another topic, though, Joe, when the schools are open for the children and the online colleges are open, what about people with disabilities and their day services?
I know. It's been a big issue all along. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't remember hearing specific information from any of the politicians about.
Well, invariably, all the daycare services are closed. That's my understanding from callers to this programme, going back months, continuing.
Yeah, is that not kind of some sort of discrimination then against the people with disabilities? Because we're providing services for our young children, which is marvellous, and, you know, colleges are continuing online. What about the people who need extra support? The very people who need the extra support are the ones who aren't getting it.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound crazy?
Well, the people who are enduring this are they're adults and young adults as well.
Yeah.
But the parents and our carers as well at home are really, that's having gone through it, it's not Monday to Friday, and it's not Monday morning to Monday evening. It's 24/7, 365, recording. It doesn't recognise bank holidays or...
Now you hit the nail on the head, because my mum, God love her, when she was alive, used to say to me, she'd say, Linda, you know, social workers and the professionals work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. She said, what happens in the evenings, and like you've just said, Joe, on a Saturday and a Sunday?
Yeah.
Who do you call?
Okay. I presume I'm just trying to remind people that on free post, I presume it applies to the residential institution where residential setting, where your son is, and to remind people you can't send books, magazines, chocolate, biscuits, or whatever, or toiletries to your free through and post.
Oh, can you? Because I have a little suicide parcel downstairs.
Yeah, do. Yeah, just write free post on it.
Yeah, but did you know what, Joe? It's even to explain to them, like my boy will say to me things like, sick, he doesn't say COVID, he doesn't have the concept of COVID. He'll say to me, sickness is, meaning, ma'am, tell me when it's going to be finished.
Okay.
And we just keep saying to him, we let you know, darling.
If only we knew.
And he'd say something to me like, COVID is finished, and he might say, in December. And I can't say yes, because obviously.
Hopefully. Linda, thanks indeed, and best of luck with your studies, but above all, best wishes with you and your beautiful boy. That's Linda. Linda's in Crumlin. Let's go straight over to CNN. They're saying Biden takes lead in Pennsylvania. He's on the verge of the presidency. This is Ireland's favourite Irishman, John King.
He's going to hit 74 million votes today as we count these votes. The President of the United States could well reach 70 million votes. Let's just go back in time to the last election, 65-62. 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton wins the popular vote, but loses because of the Electoral College and, again, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Won the popular vote, right? You see there, 65 to 62. Fast forward, 73-70, if you round the president up there, with votes still coming in. Joe Biden could well reach 75 million votes. So in this pandemic election, the challenges of voting, the safety issues and the like, expand the opportunities, expand the ways you can vote, plus the intensity. Let's make no mistake about that. There's intensity on both sides in this election because of our polarized politics. You get more voters. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Now we count them. And again, the decisive moment we are at is because that has gone from red to blue. That has gone from red to blue overnight. Joe Biden now beyond knocking at the door. He is on the verge of getting 270 electoral votes. If that trend line continues in Pennsylvania, let's just take a look. We haven't seen this in some time. Still 1,097 there. So these are very narrow leads for Joe Biden. But again, the trajectory has been methodically chipping away at the president's leads in both of those states. Now starting to methodically build leads of his own as we count more votes in Georgia and in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Biden's now ahead of Trump in Pennsylvania by 5,587 votes. That's significant, Jake, because that number almost certainly is going to go up in the next hour or two or three. Biden is going to build his lead in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
That's and right, Wolf.
That was Wolf Blitz there, as you know, and the reassuring voice to all of us. I haven't slept without John King in my ear for the last 3 nights. And of course, he is Irish. You know that. He definitely has Irish connections. Georgia, Joe Biden is 1,097 ahead. Pennsylvania, he's 5,500 ahead. Nevada, he's 11,500 ahead. And Arizona, he's 47,000 ahead. But as apparently the decision desk, which is where it all happens, the CNN's decision desk are now deciding whether to call Pennsylvania for Biden, which would effectively mean that they are deciding, if he's the next president. But as you know, there's a long way to go in terms of courts, but the vote is the vote and democracy is the people. And let's see what happens. If the CNN desk or AP or Fox or any of them, Edison, any of them call it, Pennsylvania for Joe Biden. But I can also tell you that the Secret Service, they've been with Joe Biden for many, many years as a vice president. And, you know, the Secret Service stays with him until they pass. And the Secret Service have bumped up their detail. It was a big detail anyway, on Joe Biden as of from this morning. Paddy Power have reduced their odds on Joe Biden. So when Paddy Power, who used to be the Minister of Defence in Ireland, wasn't he called Paddy Power? But Paddy Power, the bookmakers and the Secret Service are both going in the same direction. There's only one outcome. Biden takes lead in Pennsylvania on verge of presidency. Let's hope Donald Trump is still in bed. Has he been tweeting lately? Anyway, we'll keep you totally up to date on that as it unfolds. It's still early, as you know, on the East Coast, and the West Coast is still asleep. But we'll keep you up to date in the next 50 minutes. 51551, wash your hands no matter where you are.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
As I said, the presidential race, Joe Biden is ahead in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada and Arizona by given the overall vote, a slim margin, 1,000, 5,000, 11,000, 47,000 respectively. But as I say, CNN are saying Joe Biden is on the verge of the presidency. Betty Mitchell has been on this program many times, giving us an opinion and indeed stories from across the water from Birmingham. Betty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. And how are you? Because I haven't spoken to you since Paddy died, and you always mention Paddy when you're on the program, and it's a long-standing relationship. What happened? I know you told me the last time you was unwell and he had been in hospital for a while, but what happened in the end, Betty?
Well, I'd nursed him at home, Joe, we came back here to Birmingham from Ireland, as you know, and I nursed him here for the last 3 years with heart failure. He'd had a quadruple bypass in 2001, so he'd done quite well with the bypass. And as I say, I nursed him here for 3 years. And then the last final week, he just got pneumonia. Mm. So they had to take him. The hospital is quite close to us, and they had to take him into hospital. But of course, you know, listening to the lady yesterday, and I was only saying to my sister in Port Leash on Monday night, I said, there's no way that they could work it out that at least one member of a family could be with the person who is in hospital. And I mean, it would take the stress off the staff, because, I mean, they work so hard and they do so much for the patients. But anyway, as I say, going back to Paddy being in hospital, he got pneumonia, and fortunately they got it very early. So within 6 days they had cleared it up. And I used to go up every evening to the hospital at 6 o'clock. All I could go was as far as the ward door just to hand in whatever he needed.
Yeah.
And as I say, on the 29th of December, I was chatting to him on the phone and we were laughing and we were talking. And he'd rung me about four times that day. And the final call was about 5:15 in the afternoon. And my granddaughter was here. We were just redecorating the bedroom to make it all nice and fresh for when he came back. And he rang me at 5:15 and just said, you know, I had a good cry this afternoon. He called me Ginger. Good cry this afternoon, Ginger. I said, why, Paddy? Oh, he said, I'm just so excited. He says, I can't wait to get home just to hold you. I said, ditto. I said, anyway, when you come home, you'll be living like a king.
Great,
Amy and I are here doing the bedroom. And that was 5:15, Joe. 5:45, the phone went. Oh, no, I must tell you the funny bit. So he was laughing his head off when he went off the phone. I said to him, Holly, that's my granddaughter, one of my great-granddaughters. She went to say the naughty word, and her mom gave her such a look and shook her finger at her, and she said, oh, sweet holy Jesus. And that's actually how I left Paddy laughing. He says, tell that madam, when I come home, I'll sort her out tomorrow.
And
actually, that was it. Half an hour later, I got a call from the hospital. Paddy had gone.
God. And help, remind people how you met Paddy, how the two of you met.
That's a long story.
I know.
But anyway, the fact of the matter is I was a one parent on my own with four children.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been divorced. Well, I'd had an annulment.
Okay.
And I'd been divorced for 15 years.
Right.
And I remember going to a meeting in the church. Mm-hmm. And a lady there talking about how the Lord had healed her of cancer of the ovaries.
Okay.
She was only a young woman with four children. And she was beaming in a way. And I just thought to myself, my God, whatever that girl's got, I want it. Mm-hmm. So I went up and spoke to her afterwards. And then, cutting a long story short, I took her home. I met her husband, who is not a Christian, but she was still ranting and raving about how the Lord had healed her. So she said to me, you know, you should go, Father Mitchell in your parish. Well, I said, I don't know him, because I went to the parish next door to me.
All right.
Anyway, as I say, so she said, you should go and see Father Mitchell. Now, I had told her nothing about me.
Okay.
So I went at 11 o'clock at night, Joe. I went a rat-a-tat-tat on the presbytery door.
Yeah.
The old priest, Father Cullinan, God rest him, he came to the door and stuttering and stammering. Mm. And I said, are you Father Mitchell? He said, no, I'm not Father Mitchell. Father Mitchell's gone to bed. And I said, I'd like to see him, please.
Okay.
So anyway, Father Mitchell, again, he said, oh, okay. He said, I'll go and see if he'll come down. So sure enough, Father Mitchell, as I didn't know him, came down all in his priestly garb, his dog collar and suit, the lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just said to him, look, Father, my life needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if not for my sake, for my children's sake.
Okay.
And so he said, okay. So we chatted and we talked and, you know, more confessional type, you know.
Mm.
And I said, my life really does need to change. So he said, okay. He said, look, I'm just going to pray over you. He said, I won't pray out loud.
Okay.
Because I didn't know at the time, but he told me after, because he was having such great results with his praying with people, the bishop had silenced him, thinking it was auto-suggestion.
Okay.
I only found this out years after.
All right.
But anyway, so he prayed over me, and as he prayed over me, I just felt somebody got me by the head of the hair and was shaking me free. And I had a picture, which I was never used to pictures or stuff like that or visions of that. And I just had this picture of Our Lady. She was breast and brown and cream like a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus lying across her lap as he was taken down from the cross. And she just held him out to me and just said the words, look, He died for you. I didn't say anything to Father Mitchell at the time, so I left.
And what age was Paddy then?
He was in his 40s.
Okay, and how soon after that did you get together and get married?
Well, the fact of the matter is, I came to know him. He asked me would I like to attend the local prayer meeting, which I did.
Yeah.
And we built up a friendship, Joe. And a couple of years later, we both realised we were very fond of each other.
Yeah.
But because of me being a divorced Catholic at the time, I didn't have my annulment at that time.
Okay.
And him being a celibate priest and a very good one, Joe. Very good one. I'm not just saying it because he was
No,
my
I hear
husband.
It. I hear that.
Anyway, so we decided to end our friendship, which was a pure friendship, nothing else.
Yeah.
And we had so much in common. And as a result, I had a nerve. We ended our relationship, a friendship as it was, and I ended up having a breakdown.
Oh, God.
I went into the local mental hospital for 10 days. Even they wouldn't keep me, Joe.
Okay. And what age were your children then, Betty?
My children were all grown up and they'd all left home.
Okay.
They were all living. My one daughter was married.
And you reared them all?
I reared them.
You're brilliant.
I lived with four of them, Jim, Joe, and not
brilliant.
One of them. They're all in managerial jobs. They're
great,
all
great.
Very, very well.
Once they're all safe
Thanks
and sound and
they're
mentally
all safe
in
and sound.
Good place, yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're unfortunately you have a breakdown, as you say, because you had
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and then I came out of hospital and I just carried on my life as normal. And I had a few admirers, and my one friend used to say, "Oh, for goodness!" I said, "No, I know who I love, and that's it. I don't want any relationship with anyone else." And I said, "I will love him as he is, as a priest." And that was it. And it wasn't until some years later he got a phone call one day from me and he said, "I'd like to talk to you." And we did see each other at prayer meetings and at Mass and stuff like that, but nothing untowards. And in the end, he just came to me and he just said, "You know, I can't go on in the priesthood," he said. "I love you too much," he said, "and I just can't get over it, you know." So I said, "Well, the same stands for me." But he said, "Well, do we still remain friends?" I said, "Yes, fine." And anyway, then a couple of weeks after that, and I must tell you, Joe, the day he said that to me, I got a kiss on the cheek, and it was like one of the cartoon comics where, you know, you see the stars going around the girl's head after she's had a kiss from the one she loves. And that was all. He just gave me a kiss on the cheek. 2 weeks later, he came back and said, "Look, I do want to marry you. Would you marry me?"
Incredible.
And this was in 1983.
Wow.
1983.
And where was Paddy's family from?
His mum was from Belfast.
Right.
And his dad was from Edinburgh.
And were they okay about him leaving? Not that he's well able to make his own
Paddy's
decision.
Paddy's mum died of cancer when he was only 15. She was only 42. And his dad remarried again to another Irish woman, by the way.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter was that Paddy was very much
on his own. Yeah, but Paddy wanted to stay in his ministry, which he was obviously extraordinarily good at, and great faith and communication and empathy with people. So he moved from the Catholic Church to the Anglican Church.
Well, you see, the bishop here, the Archbishop at the time told Paddy, because Paddy went and seen him and told him the situation and asked if he would get a dispensation from Rome. And the Archbishop said, "No, I'll send you off somewhere foreign."
Oh, my God.
So Paddy said, "Well, I'm sorry, Your Grace, that's not going to work."
And what age was Paddy when he left the priesthood, Betty?
47, and I was 45.
Now, isn't that incredible for both of you?
Yeah.
But
yeah, exactly.
It shows how incredible your love is, that at 47, after being in a priest, and the whole, everything that comes with being a priest and your setup and you're looking after yourself, it's a big, big wrench at 47 to leave the priesthood. An incredibly brave wrench.
Well, after that we spent another 3 years, Joe, going around seeking spiritual advice from very, very good priests, women, bishops, even cardinals, Joe. We wrote to Rome. Nobody wanted to listen. Nobody wanted to hear. And, you know, the loneliness, I only know the depth of the loneliness now because Paddy is gone.
Yeah.
But
okay,
what
good
priest
point. Good
and
point.
Religious must be suffering to be to love somebody and know that you can't? I mean, where does love come from, Bob, Joe? Yeah. They say God is love.
And bizarrely, if Paddy had been an Anglican priest when you met him, and you had, which you could, got married without leaving the church, if Paddy then decided he wanted to enter the Catholic Church, he could have become a priest in the Catholic Church with you as his wife. Isn't that correct?
Joe, I said this years ago. I was at an Advent group down in London.
Okay.
Ex-priests who had left and had got married, and where they all gathered together, and they were all up in arms, the men in particular, about, you know, the priests from the Anglican Church coming into the Catholic Church and their own priest not getting a hearing.
Yeah.
And I said, hold on, boys,
and how
hold on.
Yeah.
I said, the Catholic Church, the hierarchy, have just pulled the rug out from under their own feet. They're saying you can't have married priests, and yet here they're having married priests because the Anglican priest didn't want women priests. It's a whole crazy idea.
Yeah.
We're all called to be priests. You're a priest, Joe. I'm a priest by my birth and baptism.
Okay,
anyone who is a Christian is a priest by their birth. Priest, prophet and king.
Okay. And Betty, are you on your own now in the house? I know you spoke about the...
Yes, okay. Joe.
Now, I know you've grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So.
Yeah, but they're all at work and they're all picking kids up, taking the beer, taking
And then
you're
in lockdown as well, aren't you, in Birmingham?
Well, I am, but I'm fortunate I have a car and I can get in the car and I can go out for...
And where are you from yourself, Betty?
I'm from, well, originally from inner city Dublin, Buckingham Street.
Oh, yeah, no, well, yeah.
And underneath the arches, Bella Street, that's where I was born, Joe.
Whereabouts?
Underground.
Whereabouts?
Under Bella Street, just off Buckingham Street, underneath the arches. It was turned into supposed to be luxury apartments.
Okay.
Still there now.
Okay.
That's where I was born.
Okay.
And then we moved up to Arbor Hill, Fiken Road, some years. We lived there for 55 years. You know?
Well, I know it's very difficult. And Paddy was only 83. So, as you say, you're experiencing the loneliness now. But many, many more years, Betty, for you and your children and grandchildren.
But I think, Joe, the thing about the loneliness is it's really having a structure in your day, having something, finding things to do. And if you can't find them in your own house, find people who you can ring up and chat to. There's plenty of old people and people on their own who just need a telephone call. It's so important, Joe.
Okay. Here.
Joe, can I say to you, your previous caller, the girl with the baby, God love her,
Laura.
That's not just a new thing.
I know.
That happened to a relative of mine in the 60s.
Okay.
And she was sent home from the Rotunda Hospital and told the baby is dead and she was sent home on the bus.
Yeah, but we're 60. That's awful, Betty. But it's now 60 years later.
I know.
We live in a new Ireland in every sense of the word.
Well,
anyway.
Please God, things will change. We all learn through bad experiences. Okay.
Betty, thanks again. Keep in touch and God rest Paddy. God rest him.
Thank you very
okay,
much,
Paddy.
Lovely
that's,
to talk to you.
Likewise, that's Betty Mitchell who's spoken to us before, but Paddy died in July, but it's only now she's been able to tell of his last days and indeed their own incredible love story. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT, another variation on a love story, but again, difficulties as well. Violet Balfe, good afternoon, Violet.
Oh, hi, Joe. How are you?
How are you keeping?
Okay, thank you.
It's a love story between two sisters.
I don't know about that. But
okay.
Anyway, yeah, my sister Betty, she's in a nursing home for the past 2 years. And I was listening to that lady yesterday talking about if we got a test and we put on a PPE, we could go in and sit with them for a couple of hours. And I think it's a fantastic idea. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of people around the country who would be able to do it and would love to do it.
And what way would you see it unfolding, Violet?
Well, I don't know. You see, this is the thing. I know we're supposed to be very careful and the government is doing their best to keep them all safe. But, I mean, Betty is 85. She'll be 86 on the 1st of December. And I can see her deteriorating
can you?
As Yes, because yesterday I had a visit with her at the window.
Okay.
And I can see a great change now.
And what is that like? Explain that to me. Where is she? And, like, where is the window, so to speak? Do you have to go around into a garden or a car park?
It's from the car park, it's around into a little garden. And the window is there, and it's open a little bit. And there's two chairs there. And Bessie comes in. And, of course, I open the window a little bit more than I probably should, but so that she can hear me. And I play her music. I bring my iPad. I play the music that she likes and that she loves. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was playing the Blue Tango, which was her favourite song. And I got up and I was doing the tango just to make her laugh. because I don't think they probably get much laugh, you know, sitting in a nursing home like that every day without seeing me. And that's the worry, because she doesn't see me, and I'm afraid that someday I'll go up and she won't recognise me.
And were you always companions, Violet?
Oh, yes. We've lived together all our lives.
Oh, okay, that's what I mean. Did you go on holidays together?
Oh, yes. We've had a brother in Australia, so we've been to Australia 5-6 times.
Brilliant.
And Betty was belonging to the IWA, which is the Wheelchair Association Clontarf. So she was an indoor bowler, so she used to go to the north to play bowls, and they'd come down, and then we went to Spain, and then she'd call herself an international bowler. And then she loved sport, and she'd miss all that. She loved the rugby. I would bring her around to the pub, the local pub from the care home, and she liked the local pub because the men would be all sitting there shouting at the television, and she'd be having a glass of wine or two, and It just made it normal while she was in the nursing home to bring her out, bring her to shows. I brought her to the 25th anniversary of River Dance, and that was the last show she went to see. After that, it was a lockdown.
And had you plans? Like, obviously you were sisters, but buddies throughout your life and travelled. And did you live together?
Then
Betty had to go into a nursing home. But did you still think you'd manage to go on?
Oh yes. When Betty was in the nursing home, sure, I was out there 3, maybe 4 times a week, and I would book shows for the Bord Gáis, the concert hall. I'd bring her to the movies. We'd go out to the Brass Monkey out in Howth for a dinner, down to the bay in Clontarf for a dinner, and. You know, I was just trying to make it normal, just normal living, but not coming home. That's what I was trying to do.
The pandemic.
That put a stop to that. And the last show I booked for was for Brendan Cole, which was Strictly Come Dancing. And he was on Bord Gáis. And I said, oh, Bessie will love this. And then I got a phone call to say, no, she can't go because it's a lockdown and we won't be able to have anybody in or out, you know.
But your point is, just to explain that, your point is, even, and let's remember this, that lots of people who are in our 500 nursing homes in the country, lots of them can come before this awful pandemic, could come and go shopping and go and meet friends and go to the Bord Gáis or the Gaiety or the Olympia or whatever.
Yes, I went to all those places, And it made it very normal living for Betty. You know, I just felt it was normal living for Betty. She doesn't come home, but we still go to all the places that we used to go. And she looked for, and I'd go up and I'd do her hair, and she'd sit under the hairdryer in the nursing home, have something to eat, a nice glass of wine or two.
It was just lovely.
And she misses. She misses all that, and she misses her sport. She loved the snooker. She loved the tennis, especially the rugby. You know, she's shouting her head off for Ireland. And it's just terrible. You know, it's just terrible. Wow. Yeah, it's just great.
Then you're on your own now in the house, I presume.
Yes, with the dog.
With the dog, yeah. What's his name?
It's Princess.
Princess, what's her name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Princess.
So it's just you and Princess. What's it like in the house on your own? Well, you're with Princess. That's great company.
And I'm healthy. Well, thank the Lord, I'm healthy. Yeah. So I'm able to get out and about. Of course, I don't go far. But I bring the dogs to the parks and that. And I have seen Betty on Facebook twice. Yeah. She's been talking to me. But, like, she doesn't understand that, like, she looks at and she's seeing me and she's thinking, where's Violet? She should be around here somewhere beside me, you know. So So I just think it's...
But as you say, I want to say to anyone listening, give us a test. Let us dress up in the PPE and we'll go through everything and let us in to love our loved ones. You're saying, yeah, as was suggested yesterday, that there'll be a designated visitor come companion, that that person will be told, this is what you do, this is what you need to do every time you come up, this, yes, is where you need to go, you go nowhere else, this is what you need to do in terms of wearing the PPE gear. So the one person would get used to it, just to try and alleviate this awful awful issue, which has been again coursing through Liveline for the last 7 months, and that is people being denied visits to loved ones in whatever residential setting they're actually in. We heard Linda earlier on. Stay there, Violet. Catherine Coughlin. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Good. Who was in a nursing home and a residential setting in your life?
Yeah, well, my father only had to recently go into a nursing home after a long stay in hospital. He went into hospital, I think, late April, and he was diagnosed with a heart condition, and then he was out briefly and he had to go back in. He had a really bad infection in his colon called C. difficile, which can be quite contagious, so then he had to be put in a room on his own, but there was no even television in the room for him, God love him, and we couldn't see him for 5 weeks. So when we eventually did get to see him, he was moved out to a rehab section of the hospital because he needed a lot of physio down to kind of regain his mobility, because he got so sick that he lost a lot of weight, and with not being able to kind of move about and that, you know, his muscle mass must have kind of deteriorated. Mm. So he was already kind of not that great with his mobility as it was, kind of. He's 87 now. So when I did eventually get to see him, to be honest, it was like he'd been lobotomised. And I do think if we had been able to see him, it would have totally helped, you know, his recovery. And
you're saying he couldn't have felt so abandoned. Your dad couldn't understand you, or you couldn't communicate with him when eventually you did get back in to see him?
Yeah, well, I know, like, he was probably suffering dehydration and that as well, but I nearly died of shock when I seen him.
And how long was Catherine? How long was he in hospital without any visitors allowed?
That was, I think, 5 weeks at that period that I couldn't see him. Yeah.
And his condition was, as I say, extraordinarily contagious. So he was the poor man was isolated.
Yeah, and I just found it quite inhumane that he didn't even have a TV in the room, because he wouldn't be tech savvy, so he wouldn't know how to use a smartphone or a tablet. And
this came up again 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago about. Yeah. Hospital rooms and hospital where all the televisions and all the hospitals broken. Do you all have to hire them? Lunacy in a country that is coming down with televisions that are cost next to nothing at this stage, with some philanthropist or whatever, say Isle, or some company say any hospital wants a transistor, a radio or a television for individual patients, please let us know, given especially during the lockdown, the lockdown, and the hospital can keep them down.
I think it'd be more important for someone that's in a room alone to have the TV than someone who's on a ward with other people, you know. But then now that you had to go into a nursing home, and we as a family weren't even able to kind of go in and explain things to him properly face to face like you'd want to be able to, and now we can't see him in the nursing home either. So,
and you say your brother's in a residential home as well?
Yeah, my eldest brother has Down syndrome also, and he only went into residential care last year, October. So in the first initial stages, we were kind of advised as a family that not to kind of take him out the weekend. So he got to know that this is his new home, essentially, and he wouldn't be getting confused, because he was living, you know, 5 days a week with my brother and his wife. And then myself and my other two brothers would take him at weekends, and that's how he used to kind of, you know, woke out as a family after my mum passed away, like, 5 years ago and that, and then my dad kind of wasn't able to look after him himself, you know. So we were waiting 3 years as well for the residential place for my brother Thomas. And now we're only able to see him, only two designated people, for 30 minutes a week. So myself and my brother David, I'd go 1 week and then my brother David would go the other week.
Your main point, obviously, is you want to support what Marie was suggesting, as that there'll be only one person designated. As the contact person to go into the nursing home under strict conditions, and that person would be the nursing home or the unit would only have to deal, or the hospital would only have to deal with one person. Sit them down right at the beginning and say, this is what you have to do. You're not getting in unless you do A, B, C, D, and E. This is where you go. This is where you this is how long you stay. This is how careful you have to be. You're supporting that. I want to stay there, Catherine. Anne is in Waterford. Anne, you work in a nursing home.
Yeah, hi, Joe. Yeah, I do. I work in a nursing home. Just like that lady was saying there, like no visits, especially in the hospitals, and that must be very emotional. You know, sadly, like with the lockdown, residents do not understand why their loved ones can't come into the nursing home.
And what does it mean for you as a worker?
Well, very emotional, Joe. We're explaining to the resident the reason why that outside these doors there's a virus in our world and no one knows when it's going to end, but hopefully soon. You know, to reassure them that one day our doors will open.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it very sad, though. You know, there's no mass, no priest coming on a Sunday, no communion on a Thursday.
No,
there's none. Yeah. And the residents miss all that.
And what
their beliefs.
And do they say, what do they say to you, Anne, insofar as you can generalise? Do people feel
when they explain it to me, like, we do everything we can. We do, like, video calls for families here in Ireland, especially for families that are abroad that can't come home. To see them, it's very emotional. And the resident would say, what are you doing in that TV? Why can't you come here? Or when they do a window visit, can you not come in? You know.
And how difficult, we know, we've heard from the other side of the glass, so to speak, the outside, of how difficult window visits, this another new phrase come into our vernacular this year. But what's it like from the nursing home side doing a window visit?
From our side of it, Joe, like, it's very sad, and you know, we go 100 miles more to give more comfort and love and reassurance. We go the extra miles and we do everything in our power to keep the resident, you know, safe and happy. To reassure them, like, their families do think of them. Like, one lady in particular said, you know, I think I sent you that email, that she doesn't understand why her loved one won't come in.
And
do they not love me no more?
Have they forgotten me? Yeah.
And what did I do wrong?
And,
you know, have no hugs, no kisses, and I see them at my window and they still can't come in. Like, I feel like, you know, as that lady said, like, one family member to be chosen for the full PPE to come in.
Yeah. Which was the suggestion yesterday made by Marie.
Yeah. And I believe in that also.
But but brutally honest, Anne, would having one designated visitor per, and I know everyone wouldn't have a visitor, but per resident, would that make your work much more difficult? Do you
not
follow
really, because that would, no, it would not, Joe. That would actually make me very happy.
Okay.
Because that resident is getting to see their loved one.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so it's, you know, it's very hard to, like, going back, like, this was happening. But then the second lockdown came in, and that was completely all gone then.
Yeah.
That would completely all disappeared.
And insofar as you know, would that be the view of the management of the nursing home, that there should be some relaxing. In it's so strict at the minute that relaxing is too strong a word for it. But there should be some movement towards helping distressed residents of nursing homes in terms of visits.
Yes, but you see, Joe, that would be all to do with the HSC.
That's what I mean. I know that.
I like the management of the nursing home are fantastic. Like, they've tried everything they could in their power and in vain, you know, for residents, the family members. And, you know, they just miss it all. We miss the residents, also, the family members coming in. We miss the laugh. We miss, you know, the chats and everything.
Of course. And make sure.
Can you imagine their own, the residents, what they're missing? Of their family.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult one.
And like, no one knows when this is going to end.
That's
and if
it,
so,
yeah.
Will there be another virus in our world? We don't know, Joe.
Yeah.
Hello, Joe?
Yes, Catherine, of course. Come in, Catherine.
I was listening to the lady yesterday and she made a good point as well about, you know, even if someone needs to have a risk assessment before they can go in, as in, you know, well, do you work with the public? You know, are you a high risk of contracting the virus yourself in the first, you know, because, I mean, I live by myself. I work from home at the moment, so I would be at the lower risk end of contracting the virus myself. So, you know, risk assessment, full PPE, you know, temperature checks, if needs be, a full COVID test every now and again.
I mean,
because it's another example of how the government have failed to recognise the mental health needs of people, especially, vulnerable people that don't have a voice. So they're relying on other people to speak for them. You know, the mental health, I mean, the last few years, people have been striving to make it better, and it's still very lacking in this country, and it's yet another example of where they're failing to recognise the need for, you know, to help someone's mental health. It's vital for these people. Like, that would make you cry listening to what that lady is saying about, and the way they don't actually understand, you know. My brother can't understand why we can't bring him off in the car, you know, and he gets upset when he has to go back into his house, you know, and, you know, the staff are trying to explain to him,
we're getting a human glimpse of what the lockdown means to so many people.
Yeah.
And is there any way that can be calibrated for those, especially who are in difficulties and need that human connection? As Marie said yesterday, I know you're all supporting it, and that's the reason you contacted us, one designated visitor. But Violet Balfe, thanks indeed. Catherine Coughlin and Anne, and kind regards to you and all your relatives, and Anne, all the workers in nursing homes throughout the country. Again, it's still shifting in Joe Biden's direction. I'm looking at various posts during the break. Then Nick Corisanti in Philadelphia just before, a few minutes ago, election officials in Philadelphia said more totals would be released from the outstanding 54,000 ballots. Stephanie Saul in New York, Biden has increased his lead after another batch of votes from Clayton County in Pennsylvania, obviously. And it just goes on, but it's all coming, it seems, in favour of Joe Biden. The Fox News have just told their staff they are not to refer to Joe Biden as president-elect. Who is the president?
Well, I think it's very simple. It's 5-1-5-5-1. Wash your hands. I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.